I want to read to you from an article, an excerpt from an article from the Yahoo News Agency. And I don't need... There we go. Thank you. If you weren't here last week and you wonder why we're acting crazy... Yeah. Okay. Article from the Yahoo News Agency. On Saturday, November 5th, 2011, University of Tennessee freshman Derek Broaddus was lying on the couch at his fraternity house on Saturday night, waiting for the Tennessee Volunteers college football game to start at 7 p.m. Less than an hour before kickoff, Derek fumbled for his cell phone as it began to ring. Imagine his surprise as the voice on the other end told him that the head coach was sending a police escort to get him to the stadium immediately. "I thought it was a dream," Derek said. "I was just lying on my couch relaxing, and I answer my phone, and they tell me that I need to come to the stadium ASAP. Just minutes before that call, Tennessee backup kicker Chip Rome pulled a muscle during pregame warmups. Starting kicker Michael Pardee was already out, injured in Thursday's practice. 1 hour before kickoff, and the Volunteers were out of kickers. Derek, a freshman, had tried out as a place kicker when he enrolled at Tennessee, but never made the team. But on that Saturday, Derek emerged as the Volunteers' only option. Volunteers coach Derek Dooley told the press, "I said, let's get an APB out on Broaddus. Get him here now, give him a breathalyzer test." Fortunately, he wasn't drunk. Minutes after Derek hung up his phone, the police escort arrived at the fraternity to rush him to the stadium. The team's trainer stretched him in the locker room while he put on his pads and a jersey that didn't even have his name on the back. Early in the game, Derek was called into duty, and he quickly made the most of his opportunity. Derek made all three of his extra points and kicked a 21-yard field goal at the end of the first half. His team won 24-0. Back in the locker room after the final whistle, the kicker who began the evening lying on the couch with a bag of chips was celebrated as the hero. The team cheered as Coach Dooley gave Derek the game ball and thanked him for answering the call. How many of you have a cell phone? And when it rings, you check to see, do I know the number? And if you don't answer the call. Do you think Derek Broaddus was glad that he took the call that night? I think he was. And this morning I want to talk to you about answering the call and about the concept of calling. And I want to talk to you about a call that all of us receive. And it's a call that comes from an even more important source than the head coach of the University of Tennessee football team. It's a call that comes from God. And it's not a call that just comes to certain people, certain talented people, certain well-known people. It's a call that comes to everybody. And you have the chance whether to answer the call or not. But this concept of calling isn't something that is meant to be a nice little add-on accessory to Christianity. Yeah, it's there if you want it. The concept of calling that I want to talk about this morning is absolutely central to what it means to be a Christian and to live a Christian life. And this morning I want to talk about this concept of call. And I want to talk about three different dimensions to it, because when we hear the word call or the concept of calling, we usually think of a task to do. Someone calling us to a task. But it's bigger. It includes that, but it's bigger than that. There are three different dimensions to the concept of calling. See, in the Bible, it's very clear that God calls people. What does he call them to? That's the question. And so the first dimension that I want to talk about this morning of calling and answering God's call that will come to your life, the first dimension of that is not a call to do something, but a call to become someone, to become a certain kind of person. So the first call is a call to become, a call to become a Jesus kind of person. It's a calling to be. It's a calling to be joyful. It's a calling to be loving. It's a calling to be honest. It's a calling to put away sin. It's a calling to ask God to give us a new heart, a new character. It's a calling to be a certain kind of person. And Paul writes about this concept of God calling us to be a certain kind of person. You see it all throughout the New Testament. In the book of Romans, he's writing to the church at Rome. And he says in Romans 1:7, he says, "To all in Rome who are loved by God, who are loved by God and called to be saints." It says, all of you are loved by God and you are called to be something, a saint, he says. Then to the church at Thessalonica, he says, "For God did not call us to be impure, but to live a holy life." So God, Paul is using this word call, and the call is to be a certain kind of person. To the Ephesians, Paul writes to them and he says in Ephesians 4, he says, "I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling that you have received." Live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Well, what is the calling that they have received? He says, here's your calling. Be completely humble and gentle, be patient and bearing one another in love. So the calling in each case is not to do a certain task, but it's a call to be something, to be a certain kind of person. And this call goes to all of us. You might say it's a general call because it applies to everybody who calls themselves a follower of Jesus. But then the call to be takes on then a unique role in each person's life. Because in the Bible, the unique calling that each person has is expressed in the name of the people in the Bible. In the Bible, when you have a name, it's not just a placeholder that your parents liked the way it sounded. It's chosen because it expresses who you are, what your identity is, and what your character is. It expresses your calling. In the ancient world, a person's name was their identity. It was their character. And in the Bible, when God calls somebody to a new identity, to a new character, he often gives them a new name. It's basically God's way of saying, I don't just see the person who you are right now. I see the person who I am calling you to become. I see the new you that nobody else even says yet. And I'm calling that new you out right now by giving you a new name that reflects that new identity, that new person who you are going to become. He calls that out with a new name. So, for example, in Genesis, we're told about this man named Abram. This guy named Abram, and in Genesis 17 verse 5, God says specifically to Abram, he says, "No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations." You're no longer Abram, you're Abraham, because I have made you a father of many nations. Now, when God said that to Abram, Abram was 99 years old, and he had exactly zero children. And God says, I'm giving you a new name, because you're going to be the father of many nations. How do you become a father of many nations if you have no children? And the point is, God is calling Abram to a new identity that even Abram himself doesn't see. But God already sees it in advance, and so he gives him a new name which reflects the calling that he's going to become, the person who he will become, a father of many nations. That's how God works. God is in the business of calling us to new identities. And one of the ways he does it is by giving us a new name. Let me give you a current day or an our time example. For many years, the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers was Tommy Lasorda. And back in the 1980s, Tommy Lasorda had on his team a skinny pitcher by the name of Oral Leonard Quentin Hershiser IV. Now, that's not an intimidating name, is it? All right, and it fit because Oral Leonard Quentin Hershiser IV was not an intimidating pitcher. He was scrawny, kind of stoop-shouldered, pasty-faced, and he was a relief pitcher, but he wasn't all that good, wasn't all that effective. And he got up to the major leagues, and he struggled. He gave up a lot of hits. He wasn't doing well, and one day he was in the middle of a game, and he had given up a lot of hits, and he's out there on the mound. And Tommy Lasorda went out to the mound to talk to Oral Leonard Quentin Hershiser IV. And the story goes that Lasorda took him by the shoulders and looked him in the eye, and he said these words. He says, "Oral, when I look at you, do you know what I see?" He says, "When I look at you, I don't see a scared, skinny, uncertain kid. I see a fighter. I see a man with guts. I see someone with fire in his belly. And when I look at you, Oral, I see a bulldog. And so from now on, I'm not going to call you Oral Hershiser IV anymore. I'm going to call you Bulldog." Now, for those of us who hate the Dodgers, that was an unfortunate day. Because Oral Quentin Leonard, whatever his name is, really did become a bulldog after that. It changed the way he pitched. He went on to win the Cy Young Award in 1988. The Dodgers won the World Series that year. He won the MVP of the World Series. But it all started with that trip to the mound, which Tommy Lasorda later referred to as the Sermon on the Mound. And which he looked at that picture and he says, "You're no longer that other name. Your name is Bulldog from now on." It started with a name change. And see, when God calls somebody, he gives that person a new name, a new identity. He says to Abram, he says, "Abram, you are no longer Abram, you're Abraham, because you are going to be the father of many nations." God looks at Jacob. The name Jacob means grabber. Jacob was always grabbing and grasping. He was grabbing from the moment, literally from the moment he was born. And one morning after a long night at the brook where it says that Jacob wrestled with an angel or with God, God came to Jacob and he says, "Jacob, no longer do I call you Jacob, no longer do I call you grasper, I call you Israel, because you have struggled, because you have wrestled with God and prevailed." He went to Saul, who was persecuting the Christian church, and he met him on a road to Damascus, and he said, "Saul, no longer do I call you Saul. From now on, your name is Paul, because you're going to take my gospel to the Gentiles." You have a new identity. You have a new mission. You have a new calling. And when people look at you right now, they see the you that you've always been. They see the you that you probably see yourself as. But when God comes along and when he calls you, the first thing he doesn't do is give you a task. He gives you a new name. He calls you to a new identity. He calls something new out in you. And I don't know what that is for you, but when God comes knocking, He will give you a new name, a new identity, a new way of seeing yourself. He calls you to become a certain kind of person. And that's the first part of God's call, a call to become. And then the second part of God's call is not a task either. The second part of God's call is a call to belong. There's the call to become, and then there's the call to belong. Now, in the Greek language, there are two different words for the word that we translate as calling. Two different words. The first word is the Greek word kaluo, and it's a word that's used to refer to giving a command or an order, telling somebody what to do. There's the Greek word kaluo that we translate as calling. And this is not the Greek word that the New Testament writers use when they talk about a calling from God. It's not a command. There's a second Greek word. It's kaleo. Sounds similar to the first one. And this is the one that the New Testament uses. And kaleo means to bring closer, either physically closer or relationally closer. That's what a calling is, to bring something either closer physically or relationally. When Jesus began His mission here on earth, it says in the New Testament that He began with a kaleo, or a call for certain people to belong to His circle. We're told in Mark chapter 3, Mark 3, verses 13 and 14, it says, Jesus went up on a mountainside and called, kaleo, called to Him those He wanted, and they came to Him. He appointed 12, designating them apostles, that they might be with Him. He called them so that they might be with Him, so that they would belong to Him in a new way. And over time, they became part of a community, and over time, that community began to expand. And when you get to the book of Romans, Paul is now talking to a community that Jesus started, but now has expanded all the way from Jerusalem to Rome, which is a long ways away. Geographically, distance-wise, it's a long ways away. But now Paul is speaking to this expanded community in Rome, and he says, and you also are among those who are kaleoed, who are called. He says, you are called to belong to Jesus Christ. It's a calling to belong. It's a calling to be part of a community. It's a calling to belong to a circle. And see, that community that started with Jesus, expanded to Rome, has now expanded all the way down through the centuries, 2,000 years later, and now it includes you and me. We are called to belong to that. And it isn't something that we've done. It's just something that we're invited to. We can't say, look what I did to earn my calling to belong. No, it's just, it's there. You can take it or leave it, but it's there. And unfortunately, a lot of people think that they can't belong because they're not qualified to belong. They think, you know, there's just too much wrong with me. I don't have what it takes to be part of that circle of people, the Jesus followers. You know, there's just too much junk. There's too much brokenness. There's too much darkness in my life. I don't have enough faith. I don't have enough knowledge. I don't have enough understanding to really be part of that circle. I want you to listen to what Jesus said in response to that issue. He speaks directly to it in Mark 2, verse 17. Jesus is talking about who He's calling. He says, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call, I have not come to kaleo the righteous, but sinners. How many of you are sinners? Great, you're called. You're called to belong. You really are. I don't care how much junk, I don't care how much damage, I don't care how messed up you are called to belong. You're exactly the kind of person Jesus is looking for. And Jesus doesn't say, prove you're worthy of being part of my circle. Jesus says, I want you. I want you to come and belong to me. I want you to follow me. And so God's calling on your life, God's calling on my life, does not begin by giving us a task to do, a job to do. God's calling begins with simply a call to become a new kind of person, someone with a new identity, someone who essentially would say has a new name, a new character, a new heart. And then it's a call to belong to Jesus' inner circle, to carry his name. And once you've accepted the first two parts of those callings, the call to become and the call to belong, then we get to the third dimension of the calling, which is the call to serve. All of us, once we are in the process of becoming and belonging, we are then called to enter into God's service, to serve with him in the world. And what that means is we are called to use whatever gifts and talents that God has given us, whether it's certain abilities, whether it's our brains, whether it's our resources, whether it's our time, our energy, whatever it is that God has given us, blessed us with, gifted us with. He then wants us to take that and use it not just for our own good, but to partner with him in the work that he's doing here in the world, to serve along with him. And this is a critical part of our calling, to serve others. And Peter speaks directly about it in 1 Peter. He says, in 1 Peter 4:10, he says, each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others. Each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others. Now, everybody is gifted in some way or another. But so often, we think that we're gifted so that we can serve ourselves, so that we can advance our cause, our agenda, and get our needs met. And Jesus says, you belong to me. You're now part of my inner circle. And I didn't gift you and bless you and resource you just so that you can have a nice, easy, happy, as pain-free as possible life. I didn't put you on the earth for that. I didn't gift you for that. I gifted you for service, for serving others. And a logical question that many people ask at this point is, okay, I know that I'm called to belong. I know I'm called to become. But how am I supposed to serve? How am I supposed to serve other people? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And the question is, well, you've got to figure out how God has gifted you. What natural abilities were you born with that he just gave you? What resources has it given you? And then ask the question, what need exists in the world that my gifts and my resources can meet? Because where the world's need and your gifts intersect is your calling. God hasn't gifted you to meet a need that doesn't exist. And if there's a need that exists, but you don't have the gifts for it, then he's calling somebody else to it. What he wants you to do is meet the need that he's gifted you with. And so you're going to have to get to know yourself a little bit. How has God really blessed me? And you're going to have to get to know your world a little bit and say, what are the needs out there that I can address with what I've been given? And when those two intersect, you will know your calling from God. Now, sometimes I hear this crazy idea that there's only two kind of people who God calls to service, pastors and missionaries. They get the call, but nobody else does. And it's a very common question in when a pastor's being interviewed for ordination, tell us about your calling. Now, I have no problem with the question. It's a perfectly good question. But it's not only to be asked of pastors and missionaries. Tell us about your calling. Because everybody has a calling to serve. Just like we all have a calling to belong and to become. And when we fall into this mindset that in the church only the pastors are called to serve, well, the church can't accomplish anything unless the pastor's got his hands in it, right? And that's nonsense. It's nonsense, literally nonsense. The pastor has a calling, but so does everybody else. And so the church is only going to function well when people are serving within their gifting. So in other words, the church has to be led by leaders who are gifted with leadership abilities. If the church is being led by people who don't have leadership abilities, it's not going to go very well, even if everybody has the best intentions. The church has to be taught by teachers. If it's not taught by people that God is not gifting with the teaching ability, then the teaching is not going to be very good, even if everybody really means well and tries hard. God's design for the church is that He would gift people and they would function within their gifts. And then it comes together. And so the church is to be led by leaders, taught by teachers. It's to be connected by people who are really good at connecting. People in the church are to be guided by those who are wise, and they're to be comforted by people who are blessed with comforting gifts. And when the church is operating with its giftedness, the church is at its best. But the bottom line is, there are not just a few people who are called to serve. Everybody is called to serve. And in John chapter 3, there's a very poignant illustration of what it takes to be a true servant. It's a story of John the Baptist. And in John chapter 3, John the Baptist has a thriving ministry. He's preaching and people are coming and they're listening to him. He's baptizing people by the hundreds probably. And he's developing a big crowd, a big following. He's well known and he's very popular. And then this guy named Jesus, who no one's heard of, this guy named Jesus literally shows up on the scene where John's doing his ministry. And little by little, the people who had been following John start to follow Jesus. And John's disciples get upset about this, because this guy, Jesus, is coming and he's siphoning off some of their followers. And so the disciples of John, they come to John and they complain about Jesus. You know, you got to put an end to this, John. He's wrecking your ministry. Listen to what John says to his disciples. He says, "He," speaking of Jesus, "he must become greater and I must become less." He must become greater, and I must become less. In other words, John understood this about his ministry, a ministry that he was gifted to do, that he was called to do, but he understood this. The ministry was not about him. It wasn't about him. His role was to prepare the way and then get out of the way. Prepare the way and then get out of the way. In other words, he wasn't meant to be in that role, in that job, forever. It was for a period of time. And if he didn't get out of the way, he would interfere with the work that God was trying to do, even if he had wonderful intentions. He said, "He must increase, I must decrease." Now, here's an interesting detail about John the Baptist and John the Baptist's birthday. What is the shortest day of the year? When I say shortest day of the year, I mean the day, obviously every day has 24 hours in a book. Which day has the least amount of daylight? December 21, right. That's right. By the way, which day is the world going to end this year? Yeah, it's a test. Supposedly December 21 by the Mayan calendar, I think it is. Okay, December 21 has the least amount of daylight of all the days of the year. Now, we don't know exactly when Jesus was born, right? Nobody knows the exact date. But one of the reasons that the church chose December 25 is because it's just 4 days after December 21. 4 days after December 21, are the days beginning to get shorter or longer? Longer. They're just beginning to get longer. The light is just beginning to increase on the day that we celebrate Jesus' birthday. Now, does anybody know what day the church has traditionally celebrated the birthday of John the Baptist? Again, we don't know what day he was born, but there's a day that the church has traditionally celebrated the birthday of John the Baptist. Anybody know? June 25. Anybody know why June 25 for John the Baptist's birthday? Because June 21 has the day with, it's the longest day. It's the day with the most sunlight. And what happens after June 21 is the days begin to get shorter. The light is beginning to decrease. What did John the Baptist say? He must increase, I must decrease. John understood exactly what he understood exactly what his calling was. And he knew the calling didn't come from him, it came from God. He says, he must increase, I must decrease. Now, what did Jesus say about John the Baptist? Jesus said about John the Baptist, he says, among those born of women, there has not arisen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Now, that's a huge statement. Jesus is saying, Jesus is talking to a Jewish audience, and he's saying, all the patriarchs who have come before, Moses, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, among all those, there's been no one greater than John the Baptist. Wow. But then listen to what Jesus says after that. He says, yet whoever is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he, greater than John the Baptist. See, that's how the kingdom of heaven works. The person who knows their calling knows that the calling comes from God, and it's a calling not to magnify themselves, but to humble themselves, to serve and then get out of the way. And the person who does that, Jesus says, the person who understands what John the Baptist did, that person is even greater than John the Baptist. They're the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. The person who gets that is the greatest. So your life is about a calling. Your life is about so much more than earning a salary, paying a mortgage, building a resume. Nothing wrong with those things, but your life is about so much more than those. Your life is about a calling. You've been called to become a certain kind of person. You've been called to belong to a certain group, and you've been called to serve God and the people around you with humility. And so perhaps God is calling you. Not perhaps, I know He is. He is calling you. Maybe right now God is calling you to a new way of being, a way you've never been before. to a life that is better than the one you've ever had up to now. A life where you put away the old attitudes and the old patterns of behavior that haven't worked, that just make you more anxious, more cranky, more stressed out. Maybe God is calling you to a new life where your being is different, where there's more joy, where there's more patience, where there's more love. Or maybe God is calling you right now specifically to a new way of belonging. You know, in our society, we're kind of blind to this because it's the norm for us, but we're very individualistic. But we weren't built to be individuals. We're built to be in relationship and community. And maybe there's a deep ache in your heart that you don't know where it's coming from exactly. And you've been trying to fill it with all kinds of different things and it hasn't worked. And maybe the thing you're really aching for is deeper relationship. Maybe God is calling you to go deeper with a few people or a group of people or your church family. Maybe the call to belong means you need to take it a step further. Or if you've never been baptized, maybe it's a call to make that first step of belonging to the family of faith and to get baptized. Or maybe God's calling you to a new way of serving, a new kind of ministry, a new way of meeting the needs of the people around you and the world that you live in. And that could be something you do here at the church. It could be something completely outside the church walls. It doesn't matter. It's about the kingdom of God. It's not about this particular congregation. But God has gifted us, and there are needs out there that need to be met. So I don't know what your calling is specifically, but I know He's called you to become, to belong, and to serve. And I hope that when He impresses upon your heart exactly what that is, that your answer will be yes. Because to refuse God's calling, is to refuse life.